Okie dokie. All right, this is Marina Donlevy interviewing Kathleen Ombi at her office in Houston, Texas. We're located at 900 Bagby on the second floor. Today is June 1st, 2016. And I was thinking that we ought to just start off talking more about you, kind of get your own background so that we can inform the context. So I wanted to ask, first of all, to tell me a little bit about yourself. You can start with where and when were you born?
Okay. I was born in Dallas in 1949. I was the first of three children. I have a brother who is four years younger than me, and then a sister who is 8 years younger than me.
So you're my sister, are the eldest.
Yeah, my sister lives in Houston. My brother lives in Washington, D.C.
Awesome. I was wondering if you would be willing to tell me anything about, like, kind of your impression, what you remember from your childhood of living with your mother in the house.
Okay. I graduated from high school in 1967.
And where did you go to school?
And I went to Baylor.
Okay.
University, and 1 year there, and then came home and finished up at U of H.
Okay.
And so I was out of the house in 1967.
Right.
And that was, so my remembering mother mm-hmm. growing up was an entirely different from how people remember her as a public servant,
right.
as a elected official, all that, because that was not when I was growing up.
Right.
So what I remember growing up is that mother loved to entertain. She was a gourmet cook. We had, my dad was a professor at U of H. Mm-hmm. She enjoyed having people from the history department over for dinner parties. They had friends from, they both attended Baylor University, and so they had friends from college that they invited over. So it seemed like almost every weekend there was some kind of dinner party or function at our house. And mother was a great entertainer. So she also taught piano lessons.
Okay.
And so one of her mentors was her piano teacher in Dallas when she was growing up. And so mother never really played. In fact, I can never remember even hearing her play. But she had many students that she taught.
That's interesting.
And so she really taught beginning students up to, you know, for 3 or 4 years, and then there was a lady on the next street that took students that mother sent to her mm-hmm. for more advanced training. But there would be a piano recital, you know, in our home or someplace, you know, that mother would organize for her students in May, usually every year. What I remember is her cooking a meal every night for dinner, making pies and cakes, and you know, then for these parties, you know, I remember her taking cooking lessons, gourmet cooking lessons. Mm-hmm. And so I think that was definitely one of her hobbies.
Mm-hmm. So. Well, I can see why she would use those skills later in her public life. So that seems to mesh with her character. That's really interesting to know. It kind of informs, like, your ideas of her. Mm-hmm. I was wondering, you mentioned they both went to Baylor. Mm-hmm. Is that where they met? Your parents?
You know, I think mother graduated before dad. Dad, I think, was out a little bit during the war.
Mm-hmm.
So he did not serve overseas. He was in a training here in the United States in the Navy. But I think he lagged behind mother maybe 1 year mm-hmm. in graduation. I think they knew each other and had mutual friends, but I don't think they dated until really after they both had graduated, and they the story is that they saw each other on the street in Dallas one summer, and they resumed a friendship or started a friendship or waved each other, and you know, that was
it.
That was it.
Well, that's a great story. I think it would be good to sort of turn towards sort of like biographical questions about Eleanor herself at this point. So anything that you know or remember about where and when she was born and anything she might have told you about schools she went to growing up and if you know anything about her time at Baylor.
Well, she grew up in Dallas. She had two younger brothers, so she was the eldest. Her mother was of the Burleson family, which is a very prominent family in Waco. And the Dr. Burleson was one of the founders of Baylor University. Mm-hmm. And so there were some real Baptist roots and Baylor roots in her family. Her dad, as I recall, had an eighth grade education. And so it was a complete difference in, he was a very hard worker. He was a very high achiever. He was very successful. I remember hearing that he sold hominy on the streets and sold rags, but then he ended up having warehouses that he owned. He had a chair on the Dallas in the stock market. He played the stock market. He was very successful. But it was interesting that her parents had such a difference in education. Mm-hmm. My grandmother, who was born in 1900, you know, had a college degree, which was sort of unusual for a woman at that time.
That's great.
And so she, mother, went on to Baylor University, mm-hmm. and she had, I think, five or six cousins that were all there at the same time.
A family affair.
Yeah. And so they were sort of bigwigs on campus because of this Burleson connection.
Right. That's really, really interesting. You mentioned that before, when you were in the house, she wasn't doing any of her policymaking yet, mm-hmm. And that she taught piano. Is there anything else?
She taught Sunday school.
As well?
And
I've read about
so
that.
We were very active in our neighborhood church, mm-hmm. which happened to be about three blocks from our house, Willow Meadows Baptist Church. And Mother, I most remember her teaching a class of college students or young adults. Mm-hmm. And they would come over to our house for different parties. We had sort of a game room in the back of our house with a pool table and a ping pong table. And so it was a fun place, you know, for them to come and have parties. And then it seems like for Thanksgiving or Christmas or different holiday meals, Mother would always, you know, have somebody that didn't have some place to go, mm-hmm. that she would invite over, you know, to share a meal with us. So that's really what I remember about growing up.
Do you feel that that or anything really in her life was influenced by that sort of religious factor?
I think she had a very strong moral compass.
Okay.
I think that she was very ecumenical. There was one lady in particular, a Jewish family that lived across the street, that really got Mother involved in a group that met. I don't know how often they met, but they had sort of all the different faiths come together to have discussions. I can't remember what the name of the, maybe I'll remember what the name of the group it was, but I think that Mother really enjoyed learning about the different faiths and respecting everybody for their beliefs. And so she and Dad were probably more liberal in their thinking than most of their Baptist friends. You know,
interesting.
Dad was a history professor, mm-hmm. at U of H. And so when they married, they went to North Carolina, where Dad got his master's, and then they went on to Wisconsin, University of Wisconsin, where Dad got his PhD. And then they came back to Texas, and Dad taught briefly, I think, at Texas A&M, and then came to U of H.
When were they married?
I want to say 1947.
Okay, interesting. Just sort of springing off of that, like, religious versus moral question, obviously that played into Eleanor's, like, policy opinions. Mm-hmm. How do you feel your father felt about her involvement in that?
I think he was amazingly supportive. I have heard the story that when Mother was approached about running for the school board, mm-hmm. that I believe it was Vic Samuels who came over to talk to Mother about that, and they really thought that they were coming to talk to Dad about running.
Right.
But it was actually Mother that they were interested in running. They had a slate of candidates that they wanted to form that would go against some very conservative school board members. Mm-hmm. And as it turned out, that slate won.
Well, turned out really well, I think. Other than entertaining in the house and teaching piano, were there any other groups, like organizations she was involved in before she joined the school board, or Citizens for Good Schools, or remember?
She was interested. I mean, she loved playing bridge. Mm-hmm. I can't really. They would have been a member of a Baylor alumni group,
right?
You know, maybe some different church groups, but I can't. And the faculty wives group from U of H, I remember her always being in that group. There was a group called Coterie, which was a group of women that had different study. They studied different countries or different issues each year, and everybody took a part in having a program and stuff. So, you know, she had outside interest. I think she also took some, when you go and hear courses.
Audit.
When you audit courses, mm-hmm. I know she did that at Rice some. And she was, it seems like always wanting to, you know, further her thinking about mm-hmm. different issues.
And did you say what she, know what she got her degree
in? English.
In English. Interesting.
And so she was the world's best proofreader. And I can remember growing up and still, you know, when I was an adult and my brother would say the very same thing. She could always, you know, correct us on pronouns.
Have her look over your papers and stuff.
Yeah, and if we used a pronoun incorrectly or whatever.
And was she active, like, in the PTA or anything, like, at school? Do you remember when you were in school or when your siblings were?
I think she was probably a room mother, but mm-hmm. I think my dad was at one point treasurer of the elementary PTA, but that wasn't a big focus.
Right. Okay. But your siblings were most likely, they must have been, in school when she served on the HISD school board.
Right.
Did all of you go to schools in that district or in a different?
Well, I had graduated, and so I was right. out of school. It really affected my brother mm-hmm. and sister mostly. My brother was a senior. Well, Mother was elected to the school board, and at some point my brother was a senior at Westbury High School, which is where I graduated from. And he, because of rezoning, had to change schools his senior year to Madison High School. And that was a very traumatic time. He was president of the Key Club and had other involvement at Westbury that he right. had to leave his senior year. And that was, I can show you a picture. I have a scrapbook that I can show you a picture of
great.
On the front page of the paper and him not being happy at all. About this. My sister was also very affected by Mother really just not being as at home as much as she was when I was growing up.
Right.
She had an office at the school or building, the HISD administration building.
All right.
And she took her, it was a volunteer job, she didn't get paid, but she took it very seriously. And my sister really learned to cook. I had learned to clean up, because mother was hosting these parties and right. I would help clean up. But my sister learned to cook, and she was in distributive education, so she had a job after school. So it wasn't the home life that I had.
Well, that certainly happens when moms are, you know, when they have jobs.
When I was at home, it was unusual for a mother to work outside the home.
Right.
And so there was a transition for everybody when women started doing that more and more. And it just sort of hit, even though it was volunteer work, it sort of hit my sister more than it hit me.
And I've read stories that you've told when you've done other interviews about the backlash that the family felt, especially during like the desegregation of HISD. I read the story of people throwing things in the yard, but you weren't home during that.
I was not home. I knew about it or I was told about it. It seems like it was black roses or something that people threw in the front yard.
Was there any kind of like community backlash that you felt from, obviously, you were far away, but when you heard what they were going through at home?
Well, mother and dad decided to sell the house and really, for security reasons, move into the Greenway condos because it was a lot safer. Mother was going out at night and to different events, and dad often went with her, but it was just safer for her to come in. I think one of the big reasons was for safety.
And you think that the moral compass we talked about earlier is what really drove her to support desegregation? Or do you have any anecdotal ideas about like why she would have thought that was the right thing to do?
Well, that's where Dad, I think, really came in because of being a history professor. He could he could help her understand historically what was happening with desegregation and how some school districts in some states were really fighting all of this in court, you know, and at some point that they were going to just keep fighting.
Right.
And paying lawyers to fight something which my parents felt like, you know, was going to happen and needed to happen.
Right.
That it was evident that separate was not equal, and that everybody needed to come up with a solution to the problem and not just keep fighting it. Right. And so I think mother was very much aware of the rights of other people. I mean, I can remember still going to a grocery store, a Wine Gardens grocery store, where, you know, there was a colored and white sign over the water fountains and over the bathrooms. And so that was, you know, when I was growing up. And when I graduated from Westbury High School, there were no black, there were no students that weren't white.
Right.
And so I think that we were always going to be well-educated because of our family, you know, but mother really saw that there were other people in Houston that needed help and needed a way to escape their poverty and their their backgrounds and education, and public education for sure was one of the ways that people could get out of their situation.
Right. And it's clear from the rest of her, I mean, the rest of her career that she had a heart for human rights and clearly saw it as an important movement to champion. I mean, especially if we move on to talking about being elected to city council, I've read that one of the big reasons that she won is because she was running against a man who was so blatantly anti-LGBT. Mm-hmm. But I think it's very interesting to think about why she had that kind of platform. What do you remember about that campaign? I know you were also not in the city at the time.
Well, first of all, let me go back to the school board.
Please do.
I remember Mother saying that the most afraid she ever was in political office was when the Ku Klux Klan came in their white robes to a school board meeting.
Oh my gosh.
And just how she was, you know, afraid. Mm. And there was so much hate in the room. And I think that just empowered her more to think that something had to be done. And so I think you saw some of that same, and then she lost. You know, she ran again for the school board, mm-hmm. and three of the people that ran with her the first time ran again, and they all lost. And so they had put in some policies and some busing and that remain to this day. Mm-hmm. I mean, the magnet schools, which was a way to get students sort of mixed in different areas of, like, the High School for the Performing and Visual Arts.
Right.
You know, that's a great school that, you know, started back when Mother, you know, was on a way to desegregate.
And also, that's when Houston Community College...
Right.
And she was instrumental in working on that
right.
as well.
And she really believed strongly that people needed to come out of high school and, you know, have a plan of, mm-hmm. you know, and not maybe everybody can go to U of H, but maybe they needed to go to a community college and learn a trade or
right.
something so that they could support their families. So then she was defeated, which was very hard.
What did she do in the interim?
She really bounced back and served on different. She sort of then had a name for herself,
right.
and was on some different boards. The Harris County Child Welfare Board. I think she was appointed to the. I think she was. What do you call it when you're on a jury, a grand jury? Yeah, I think she served on a grand jury. She became more visible in the community, I would say. And then she was approached to run for city council, and no woman had been elected to city council before.
Right.
When Mother was elected, it was Mother who ran at large and Kristen Hartung who ran the district.
Mm-hmm.
And she was up against a 20-year incumbent who had blatantly called, all I thought about then were gay men. You know,
mm-hmm.
There really was not a discussion about lesbians or gay women. You know,
right.
It was men. And, and he called them odd wads.
Right.
And then at the same time, Mayor Welch did not realize mic was live, and he said something like, shoot the queers.
My gosh.
And so, anyway, it was a real hateful time again.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people just being paranoid about, you know, were you going to be infected with this
right.
being gay?
Certainly.
You know, were you going to... catch something that, mm-hmm. you know, whatever. And so I think Mother had compassion for these men, and I think they were mainly men, although I think Anise Parker would say that one of the first campaigns she ever participate in was mothers. And so there definitely was a group of women, you know, but I just think it was, to me, it was more pronounced that it was a men's, you know, group.
Well, it wasn't everything.
Yeah. but I think it was interesting in that so many of the men had been sort of turned out by their families, and they saw mother as a mother figure that understood them and had compassion for them. And, you know, I think to this day, she was always sort of revered in that mm-hmm. community because she was she understood them before a lot of people understood them.
Had she ever expressed that compassion before this campaign that you remember? Or was it something that sort of she always had in her and it made sense at the time? And
I don't remember
ever talking about it. Oh, that makes sense. It wasn't really
I don't
table
think
talk.
You really talked about it.
Right.
And so, I mean, I don't remember any knowing anybody that I thought was gay.
Right. Well, I read that it was like a, it was pretty landmark. The Gay Political Caucus had never endorsed anybody.
Well, nobody would want their endorsement.
Until this point. And it ended up being really a very good move on her part, and it really worked out. And I've read, I think that, I'm not sure, if, I think a quote directly from her that she thought she would gain more votes than she would lose, and clearly she was correct in that. But it's just so interesting, how did she know that she was going to be, you know, doing the right thing other than this moral compass that we've talked about already?
Well, I think she was sort of before her time mm-hmm. and on a lot of issues, and certainly on that issue.
How do you think she did her outreach to get these minority voters interested in her? Like, I know it's not just LGBT people, but also she had a lot of support from Asian Americans and clearly African Americans as well, probably from knowing about her desegregation fight.
Uh-huh. I remember her visiting a lot of black churches, which mm-hmm. were probably still what a lot of politicians do, but in the black community, she really fought for them, for equality in schools. She fought for the black teachers and the black administrators. At that time, there were no black administrators, right. And so they will never forget, you know, that she went to bat for them.
For sure. Do you remember what it was like when she actually won her seat on the city council? Do you remember anything about that?
I think we lived in Dallas. My family and I lived in Dallas at that time. But we would, and then after Dallas, we lived in Tulsa for 10 years. And so I didn't come back
oh, wow.
to Houston until 88.
Right.
And so, but I would usually come back with my children at least to work in the campaign mm-hmm. during that election night or election weekend or whatever. And so that was, you know, a great experience to go and put out signs and pass out cards
right.
On voting day and sort of get mixed up in the excitement. But other than that, you know, I wasn't in Houston.
Right. Do you know if she felt any backlash then after winning that seat? I've read the story of going into the city council and there was no sign for the women. It only said councilman in the hallway. Mm-hmm. But other than that, clearly sexism in politics. But mm-hmm. from voters or from the community, do you think she felt backlash then?
I just remember the story about there being some discussion about councilmen and then it being changed to council. And then there was on the whatever floor they were on,
mm-hmm.
There were the established men that were that wanted to be all on the same floor, and Mother wanted to be on the floor with the other at-large council members.
Right.
And she was told that there wasn't a place for her. And so she, I guess, sort of boycotted, or she at some point got away and was on the floor with the other at-large council members.
She forced her way in.
Yeah.
Do you think she had that was part of her personality, sort of like making her own way?
I think she wanted what she deserved. And she I think, picked her issues. But then when she felt like it was worth fighting for, she had a strong backbone and would go up and fight for what she thought was right.
Everything I've read about her kind of makes me think that, like, everything she fought for was about quality of life. And so I think it would be an interesting time to, this is totally wrong, turn to talking about some of her other projects, like the anti-smoking ordinances, city beautification, which I definitely think feeds back into the same, she wanted Houstonians to feel, all have a certain quality of life. And I was wondering if you had any insight on the billboards or the anti-smoking, and then I'd really like to talk about Spark Park a little.
Okay. Well, I remember the talk about the billboard lobby really targeting her and really sending their big guns to for her not to get the votes she needed to get whatever she got passed.
Right.
And so that was the same, the billboard lobby and also the smoking lobby. You know, she was, you know, before her time in those. And so I think that Madeline Appel, who was her chief council aide, was very smart and really did all the research. And so Mother was prepared in any kind of discussion that, you know, somebody told me once that she was the mouse that roared. I mean, she was small in stature, and she people thought that they could intimidate her, but they could not. And I think that she really felt very empowered when she won against a 20-year incumbent.
Right.
And that she had people that voted her because they thought that she would make the right decisions. And I think that on the smoking, that she knew enough doctors and knew that Houston, you know, had a large medical center population, and it was the right thing to do in Houston, and why wait until and be the last ones to join the parade, and why not lead the parade? And so I still, you know, people will come up to me and of everything that she did and accomplished, you know, they'll say something. I remember when I couldn't go to sporting events because I couldn't breathe, you know, with all the smoke. And so people like you probably don't even remember that.
Oh, never.
But, like, to go to the Astrodome or to go to watch basketball games or any enclosed things where people would be smoking all around you. And if you had any kind of breathing problems or asthma or whatever, it was just terrible.
Right.
And so I think if you went to the theater, you know, it was just, there was, you just didn't get to go, you know, because
you couldn't
deal with it.
Right.
And so I think that people to this day still remember what she did to advance that, the no smoking.
What do you think that she would consider her greatest accomplishment during her tenure? I know that's a hard question.
Yeah. Probably the billboards and the no smoking.
Right.
Yeah, I can give you this whole list of things that
Well, what would you consider?
Well, I mean, I have, I moved back to town with my husband and kids in 1988.
Right.
And when I would, and I'd been gone for 15 years. Mm-hmm. And so when I came to visit Houston, in order to be with Mother, you went with Mother. And so she had, you know, every day different things that she was doing. And so I would tag along and go to different lunches or different events. And several times I would go to different Spark mm-hmm. dedications or meetings or whatever. And so I knew something about what she was doing about Spark. And she was always real proud of sort of this initiative mm-hmm. to, because it was very unequal when you saw schools in poor parts of town that had an asphalt slab.
Right.
And then you went to schools in more affluent areas where a PTA could visit, could, you know, have a Halloween carnival or something and raise enough money for amenities to the park.
Right.
And so, again, it was inequality that Mother saw. Well, let's see how we can address this. And so when I came back, when I moved back to town, I offered to volunteer in Mother's office just to sort of get back in the swing of living in Houston again.
Right.
And that's when the assistant director for Spark decided to go back and teach at the community college level. Mm-hmm. And then Mother said, well, do you want this part-time job? And I had worked in the PTA at my kids' schools in Oklahoma and then had been real involved in several garden club, park type initiatives. And so it was not something I didn't know anything about.
Right.
And so that was sort of how I started with Spark. And so I think it has been a very lasting contribution to the city. It's interesting, some people don't know that I'm her daughter, you know, because I have a different last
right.
name. And I don't go out and just say, you know, I'm Eleanor Tinsley's daughter. But I'm very proud, of course, that she started the program. And I'm very passionate about carrying out the ideas of mm-hmm. of increasing park space in the city.
How did she get involved with starting Spark?
Well, there was a green ribbon study that was done by the mayor, who was then Jim McCann, and the county judge, who was, I think, Eccles. And they did a green ribbon study on how to increase park space in the city of Houston. And one idea in this report was to make use of public school grounds. And so since she had been on the school board, she knew sort of who to go to at HISD as far as who could make some high-level decisions on what partnerships could be managed between the city and the school district. And then, you know, we went on and got our nonprofit status and...
Very
the rest is history.
Yes. And then the only other thing I wanted to ask is if there's anything else that I haven't asked that I didn't think of.
Let me just.
Or if there's any stories that you've never gotten a chance to tell or anything like that, something you think is important.
Well, I think you'll enjoy just reading through some of these notes.
Great.
This was sort of interesting. Madeline wrote most of Mother's speeches, and so some of these notes came from Mother's speeches. And so I'll just read you a couple of things. the upside of politics, meeting people, all sorts of people, from the Queen of England and the Dalai Lama to the teachers at Spark Schools. People energize me. Their enthusiasm and pleasure revitalizes me. I mean, Mother could go to, you know, when I moved back to Houston, one of my jobs that I loved doing was to take her places. She had a terrible sense of direction, and so either Dad would take her or she would have somebody in the office take her, or I would take her. And so, you know, she would go in a room and she would do what she called the zigzag through the room and shake as many
hands.
Yeah, say hi to everybody. So people really did energize her. Their enthusiasm and pleasure revitalizes me. The friends who work with you and stand by you through the years, making a difference, plowing new paths, seeing a project take root and blossom, having a hand in making Houston a better place in which to live. Politics, the downside, would be the name-calling, the criticism, the invasion of your privacy, the constant spotlight, the sacrifices your family has to make, and having to raise huge amounts of money to run a campaign. And so probably the downsides, some of those have even gotten more, because she was certainly in politics before everybody had a telephone and everybody had Facebook and everybody could put whatever they wanted to on, you know, without checking the facts. And I don't know that she would have liked all that.
What was it like working with her when you were both doing kind of here with Spark and working together?
It was a privilege for me to see what a difference she was making and to be on the inside of you know, how that was being played out. To be in her office, which was like a think tank of, you know, how can we study this issue and how can we present it so that other people will want to join us in support of this? How do we get funding for this? You know, I think she was a real team player, and so she always knew that she had to get whatever it was, 8 votes. You know, she knew some people would be for her and some people would be against her, but she knew how many votes she had to get. She also would be the first one. I don't have as thick skin as she did. She would never really hold a grudge against somebody. Like, she knew that after a council meeting, she always said, you have to get in the elevator with the people, you know, even though they voted, you know, maybe against you and it was very disappointing or whatever, but there would be another vote that you needed them and they would be there. And so I think she realized that. She realized compromise and how bringing everybody into the same room that had different ideas. I think that was one of her her strong points, was to hear everybody's viewpoints and then see how we could all work together. And maybe not get, nobody got exactly what they wanted, but everything, the issue was pushed forward because everybody had a voice at the table.
Great. Is there anything else you'd like to say? I don't mean to put you on the spot.
Yeah. No, I think that probably says it all.
Awesome. Well, I really, really, really appreciate you talking to me. And if you don't mind, I will